to the KTEP Book Club on Perspectives. I'm your host, Louis Sines. And joining us today is Allison Pataki. Allison is a New York Times bestselling author, and her latest novel is The Accidental Empress. Allison is the author of the New York Times bestselling and critically acclaimed novel, which came out earlier, The Traitor's Wife. She graduated from Yale University with a major in English and spent several years writing for TV and online news outlets. She is the daughter of former New York State Governor George Pataki. She was inspired to write The Accidental Empress by her family's deep roots in Hungary. And Allison is also co-founder of the nonprofit organization Reconnect Hungary. She's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and FoxNews.com, as well as a member of the Historical Novel Society. So you're very busy, Allison, so we appreciate you taking the time to be with us here today. And as I said, we're just going to have a conversation. And one of the things that I want to ask you, you mentioned in one of your posts, I can't remember where it was, that when you were in college, you were pretending that you were working. So all the homework and everything else was fun to you and you enjoyed it. And at the same time, you pretended, okay, this is what I'm going to do in the real world. So let's have fun.
Well, that's exactly right. Thank you for having me. When I got to Yale and I was able to choose my major, and I chose my major in English, I thought, this is really a dream come true, because suddenly I am spending all day studying the things I love. I am reading great books. I am discussing them with inspiring, fascinating classmates and professors. And this is my work. This is my job. I get to pretend like this is hard work. Not at all. So I just absolutely loved it. I always joke that like my idea of going to heaven will be back in the Yale English classroom, just because I loved it there so much. And yes, I'm fortunate because I have found a way to continue to really indulge those passions by writing fiction now and getting to still be completely immersed in books and narrative and storytelling and just talking about books like I've always loved to do.
Now, when you're talking about writing novels, they're not just fiction, they're historical fiction. And some people say, well, isn't that an oxymoron? But you have to be very careful, I would imagine, when you're writing historical fiction. And people like Steve Barry, Nelson DeMille, some other people who have written historical fiction, even though it's fiction, you have to remain true to the story.
Right. With the case of The Accidental Empress, which is the story of Sisi, that's the nickname of the last great empress of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Empress Elizabeth, but she was known as Sisi. When you have a cast of characters as compelling as Sisi and her husband, Emperor Franz Joseph, and all of the other figures at the Habsburg court, right at the eve of World War I, which is their setting, and then you have the backdrop as glittering and glamorous, but also as, you know, treacherous and intriguing as the Habsburg imperial court, and you have this time period that is shifting. This is the time period that's giving us some of the greatest advances in the arts. And, you know, Johann Strauss is their court composer, giving them the waltz every year. And they've got Wagner composing opera, and they've got Gustav Klimt painting their court paintings. And they've got Sigmund Freud just down the road developing psychoanalysis. This is an incredibly rich bed of material with which to begin a historical fiction novel. This is all of the ingredients that any writer of fiction could ever want. And so the decision I came to pretty early on in the process, in the research and the writing, is that, hey, I'd be crazy not to use this history, not to rely on this history pretty heavily. Even just the title itself, The Accidental Empress, speaks to the fact that Sisi, Empress Elizabeth, was never supposed to be empress. She traveled to the imperial court at the age of 15 with her big sister. Her big sister was the intended bride for the emperor. What happens when they get to the court is the emperor, who happens to be the world's most eligible bachelor, I should say, because he's a hot, handsome, you know, wealthy, powerful young 22-year-old with Walt Disney palaces, you know, as his real estate. He gets the glimpses of Sisi and her big sister and decides, hey, I'm not going to marry big sis. I want to marry Sisi instead. So he takes this 15-year-old girl, he plucks her from obscurity, thrusts her onto the throne of the Habsburg Empire. It's, you know, love at first sight or lust at first sight, you might say. And they have a fairy tale wedding, but this is not your typical fairy tale. This is not your typical fairy tale marriage. This is a very, very tumultuous beginning to the relationship, and it goes on to be a very tumultuous life that the two of them lead together. So all of the fixings for historical fiction are there in the historical record. And then where I get to deviate, where I get to have a little bit of fun as a fiction writer, is the places where you know, Sisi was a figure who inspired mythology in her own lifetime. Like, every once in so, there are these figures in history who come across like Jackie Kennedy, like Marilyn Monroe, like Princess Diana, who really are larger than life, and they are legendary, even in their own time. And Sisi was truly that way. So I get, as the writer of historical fiction, I get to pluck from the historical timeline and the record, but I also get to pluck from the mythology and the rumor and the report. And then in the back of the book, I do go through and I explain where exactly, you know, I deviated or why I did or where the historical record was unclear, so I made certain executive decisions as the writer. I go through all that. I explain the process, but it's just a blast to write this type of book. Hopefully it's a blast to read it. I hope it makes history entertaining and accessible and fun and really, really come to life as it does for me as the writer.
We are visiting with Alison Pataki. Alison is a New York Times bestselling author of The Traitor's Wife. Her most recent novel is The Accidental Empress. And as Alison was mentioning, when you purchase this book, in the back of the book, there's a little section that says a conversation with the author, and she explains what Alison has just been telling us about the liberties she took, how she did certain things. And so in addition to the great story, you're going to get also information about the author and some of the things that you may be wondering about. Now, Alison, you mentioned earlier about the fairy tale wedding and the fact that it was there, but it wasn't, because as you mentioned, you know, in the Walt Disney movies, you see that a little girl marries a prince and they live happily ever after. That was not the case here. And from the beginning, as you mentioned, things were a little bit unsettled, especially with Sissy's future mother-in-law.
Right. So exactly as you said, this is not your typical fairy tale. Things get off to a rocky start because when Sisi is Franz Joseph's chosen bride, he jilts the big sister. And so that creates, as you can imagine, a very uncomfortable love triangle. But even more so, Franz Joseph's most powerful advisor had set up the marriage to the big sister for diplomatic and professional reasons. And Franz Joseph, in deciding not to marry the big sister and deciding to marry Sisi instead, he crosses his most powerful advisor, and that happens to be his mother. So as you can imagine, this sets up a very tense dynamic with mother-in-law. When Sisi enters Franz Joseph's life and court and becomes his wife and becomes his empress, there is a struggle there from the beginning, and it only gets worse. And there's all sorts of stuff like this that's going on at the court that the young empress, who's 16 when she gets married, 15 when she begins her life with Franz Joseph, she has to learn to navigate this really treacherous place. And almost like think about a child star today, where you go overnight from having a private life as a citizen to all of a sudden having everything, having all the money and the power and the notoriety in the world and being instantly recognizable and famous. That's the adjustment that Sisi had to go through at such a young age and in such a severe, abrupt way. And that was difficult because Sisi was a sensitive, independent, intelligent, free-spirited, almost tomboy young woman. And suddenly she's put into this role where she has all of these expectations. She's world famous. She becomes a global celebrity, literally, just by marrying the emperor. And it was an adjustment for her. And we watch all of that play out. And we watch all of the drama that that leads to throughout The Accidental Empress. And so Sisi is someone, we go on this journey with her. We root for her because, man, she is dealt a tough hand.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the fact that, as you gave the example about the child star becoming overnight sensation, and all of a sudden he or she doesn't know what to do, how to handle it. The same thing, I guess, on their wedding day, where Franz Joseph tells her, listen, you know, you're now the queen, you're now the empress, and you're going to have to act this way, we're going to have to act this way, just play the role. And that doesn't sit right with her.
Right. The Habsburg court was the quintessential old school monarchy court of Europe. This is the height of refinement and elegance and pedigree, and they're all blue-blooded aristocrats from centuries back. So the emperor and empress of the Habsburg court, they have a job to fill, and it is not about what the individual wants. It is about the individual doing their duty. Each individual is a cog in the imperial machine, and this is what Sisi discovers, and this is what we discover as we read The Accidental Empress. That does not sit right with Sisi, who is an independent, free-thinking woman. She does not appreciate suddenly, you know, thinking she's marrying for love, but then suddenly being put in this role where she is there to support the emperor. She is there to bear the male children, to produce heir after heir of little prince. Oh, but by the way, as soon as she has these children, they get taken from her. They get taken by her mother-in-law. This is not okay for Sisi, as it wouldn't be okay for us, you know, modern readers. We see this and we're horrified by it, but that was how it was expected to be. And so Sisi's is really a journey towards self-actualization, towards self-realization, as she tries and fights to carve out this role for her in this court, where she's really beginning at a huge disadvantage because she's a naive, romantic girl, and she thinks she's marrying because she's madly in love. And those illusions come crashing down very quickly, and we watch Sisi kind of have to come into her own and, you know, rise as the leading lady of her own lifetime. And we can really root for her as we go on this journey with her.
We're visiting with Alison Pataki. Alison is the New York Times bestselling author of The Traitor's Wife. The most recent novel is The Accidental Empress, the story of Empress Elizabeth. And let me go back a little bit and tell our listeners, because one of the things that in the readings that I did was the fact that Americans know perhaps a lot about American history, but not too much about European history, unless you have a descendants from there or you go on a visit like you did. But the empire that Sisi was involved with stretched from Austria to Spain, from Germany south to Italy. And so this young man is rich, young, and ready to marry, as you mentioned, a hot, eligible bachelor. And all of a sudden, Sisi, you know, goes into this part and she becomes the empress. However, as you say, we root for her throughout the novel. Is there a problem when we realize that Sisi is less sympathetic? I guess when she becomes a little bit more vain, is it harder for us to cheer for her, or do we just kind of keep on going? What did you intend to do with that as a writer?
Sisi, this was what immediately won the heart of the emperor. Sisi was incredibly physically beautiful. She was intelligent and charismatic and had much more to her than her beauty, which you'll see when you read The Accidental Empress. But ultimately, one of the things that she's most remembered for, and one of the things that she was most revered for in her lifetime, was the cult of beauty around her. And she put tremendous care into her beauty. She grew her hair to the floor. She refused to cut her hair. And what she would do with this thick chestnut hair was these elaborate hairdos all around her head. Like if we think Princess Leia did elaborate hairdos, this is even more elaborate. If she was washing her hair, she would clear the schedule. It took all day to wash her hair. She would come up with all these home remedies for wrinkles. She would sleep with raw meat on her face. She was obsessed with tight lacing her corset so she'd keep her small waist. She was very into exercise. She was very particular about what she ate. So really, she did cultivate her beauty almost like it became an obsession. And I think that is because it was one of her greatest strengths. She knew that that was one of the things that gave her power, not only with the emperor, but with the court and with the people. And so she had this kind of love-hate relationship with her beauty. She loved it in that she wielded it like a tool, and she nurtured it, and she, you know, in some ways worshipped her beauty. But in other ways, she resented it because she was stalked and pursued like a celebrity would be today by the paparazzi. Everyone wanted to see her. People would line up for days ahead of time by the side of the road just to catch a passing glimpse of her. And she resented that. She wanted more privacy. She was shy. She didn't like being constantly studied. She'd always hold a fan in front of her face when she was out in public so she could gain, you know, some bit of privacy. So we see her vanity. You know, we recognize that it was in many ways probably, I'm not a doctor here, but it was a disorder. It was probably an unhealthy obsession. And yet we go on this journey with her from tomboy at the age of 15, who runs barefoot through the woods and, you know, is outdoors playing with animals and riding, you know, bareback on horses. And then we watch her become more and more beautiful and glamorous and sophisticated and elegant. And it's such a gradual process that we kind of see how and why it happens. And ultimately, whatever you might say about it, Sisi's beauty is one of the things that she is most remembered for. So, for instance, Chanel just did a major fashion ad campaign called Cece, where Cece was the star of it. Carolina Herrera, the iconic designer, just designed Jessica Simpson's wedding gown and said publicly that her inspiration for the wedding gown, was Cece. So she still, to this day, captures the public imagination. People are still fascinated by her beauty and her fashion sense and her unique appearance. And so that was a big part of her, and one that, you know, if you're doing a portrait of her, as I was at the Accidental Empress, you have to acknowledge and contend with.
We're visiting with Alison Pataki. She is the author of the novel The Accidental Empress, the story of Empress Elizabeth Cece, who marries Franz Joseph. And we're talking a little bit about what she had to struggle with. And one of the things that we discussed earlier, Alison, the fact that people here in America may not be that familiar with European dynasties, European history. A lot of the history that is taught in the schools, unless you're a world history major or a literature major, you're not going to know much about this. Tell us what you expected. First of all, you told us that you got this idea on a family trip because you went to Hungary, you went to Germany, and you saw all this. Did you expect the fact that you would have more difficult time writing this to the American public, introducing Cece?
I knew that Cece is such a worthy, compelling, interesting leading lady that as soon as I got somebody to listen, I knew that there would be interest. The challenge I knew would be to get people to care. Why do I want to read about a Habsburg empress? To which I say, we've read all about the Tudors, Anne Boleyn. We've read all about Marie Antoinette. We've read about the Italians, you know, the Medici and the Borgias. We've read about the Russians. The Habsburgs are the most dramatic, most powerful, most significant, most dysfunctional ruling family, and yet we've done nothing with them in fiction and with pop culture for an American audience. And Cece is the leading lady that I think is the most worthy, most compelling, most interesting, most fascinating, most beautiful, and yet she's the least well-known. And so I think everything from her incredible charisma, her larger-than-life personality, her cult of beauty that still to this day retains a legendary status, I think all of these things make people so interested. And it's been a pleasure and a blast to watch readers react and say, you know, I didn't know anything about her, but now I'm so obsessed with her, I can't stop Googling her. I want to go to Budapest. I want to go to Vienna. I want to, you know, visit her palaces, walk in her footsteps. That is all that I could hope for as a writer, because that's how I felt. I felt so bewitched and beguiled by her. And I'm just so glad that I'm giving that to readers now. And I really think that Americans, though we don't necessarily know as much initially about the Habsburgs, we know more than we think. We know the Walt Disney Castle. Yet here's the fun fact. The Habsburg, you know, Cece's cousin was the one who built the Walt Disney Castle. We know about World War One. Well, Cece's husband was the family that declared World War One. We know that just down the road from Cece in her imperial capital of Vienna, a young Dr. Sigmund Freud was pioneering psychoanalysis. We know Klimt was a painter. Well, did we know that Gustav Klimt was Cece's court painter? We know waltzes. We can all hum waltzes, you know, Fantasia, theme song, Nutcracker, etc. But do we know that Johann Strauss, the waltz king, was Cece's court composer? He was composing waltzes for Cece on a yearly basis. So there are all these fun touchstones to the Habsburgs. I think it's just a matter of making people aware of them and inspiring people to get interested. And again, that's why I love historical fiction so much, because while someone might not necessarily be inclined to pick up a really dry historical biography or you know, nonfiction list of facts, they will pick up a novel, and a historical novel like The Accidental Empress, I hope, will make the history entertaining and accessible and really fun, and then ultimately inspire people to then go on their own journeys to learn more about this history.
And a lot of times, as you mentioned, because they run into a character and they look it up, they find the facts and they go, oh, I didn't know that was associated with this. And then it draws more interest. So they go and Google or search whatever else they find, and they see those connections that you just talked about.
That's exactly right. And that's one of the best things I know when I am a writer or when I'm getting these books out, is that if somebody tells me, you know, as I was reading, I just had to Google stalk. I had to read everything about them online. I had to look at their Wikipedia page. I'm like, well, I'm so glad, because when I'm reading historical fiction and I really love it, that's how I know. It's because I then want to go on my own quest to learn everything I can, because that historical fiction novel has really inspired me and fired me up. And so to give that to readers is exactly what I'm hoping to do.
We are visiting with Allison Pataki. Allison is the author of The Accidental Empress, the story of Sissi, Empress Elizabeth, who married Franz Joseph. And this is a very interesting novel because not only is it historical and you learn about the different characters and the reign in Hungary and Budapest, but you also learn about the various characters and who Empress Elizabeth really was. And so you learn and you get entertained at the same time. And as I mentioned at the end of the novel, Allison also has questions, a conversation with Allison to talk a little bit about how she went about her research to help you out in case you need some help. Perhaps why did she do this? Why did she do that? And one of the things that people are asking, at least what I've seen in some of the blogs and different things about your novel, is the scene of the coronation, the Hungarian coronation, that it's interwoven throughout the novel. How come?
Yes, because that's the final scene and the first scene, and we work our way up to this scene as we read the book. And that is really a symbolic scene in Sissi's life, because it was a moment where she came into the height of her personal power as a woman, as a wife, as a mother. That was the time she came into her greatest physical strength, her greatest physical beauty. And that was really, you know, we touched on this earlier in the conversation, but Sissi as a young woman, as a young bride, as a young wife, as a young mother, as a young empress, went through really hard times adjusting to this role and being swept up in the court apparatus and just completely losing her identity and her individuality for this all-consuming, all-demanding role of empress. And then when we make it to the coronation in 1867, that is the crowning moment, pun intended, of Sissi really having earned her own role at the court. And I'm not going to give away why, but all of the action of the book in some ways leads up to this moment because it's her moment of victory in many ways. And again, I don't want to give away what gets us to this point, but this is the culmination of her work as a public figure, as an empress, but also her private life as a wife and as a mother. And in these battles she's been fighting the whole time she's been at court as a young bride. And so it is resolution, it's victory. But I will say this, it's only halfway through Sissi's reign and life, so there's a lot more Sissi story to be told, so that might mean there's a book two on the way. But yeah, that's really in many ways a climactic moment in Sissi's life and in the history of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's when the Austrian Empire switches from being the Austrian Empire to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It has to do with Sissi's role at the court, and her relationship to the people, and it's really in many ways like the climactic moment. But I'm going to say that people will have to read to find out why, because I don't want to give anything away.
And Allison, you read my mind because I was going to ask you about the ending and the fact that there seems to be a lot more of the story to be told. And so you left us there saying, well, maybe there's a lot more coming, but you have to read this one first.
Exactly. So pick up The Accidental Empress first, and then you'll see why.
I want to find out a little bit more about your first book, The Traitor's Wife, because I have not read that book, but it seemed intriguing to me from what I read, the reviews, and the fact that a lot of people do not know. They know that Benedict Arnold was a traitor, that George Washington ordered him hanged, but they don't know about the third party.
That's exactly right. They don't know that Mrs. Arnold, Benedict Arnold's wife, is the critical figure in the whole thing. So Benedict Arnold was this American war hero. He was one of George Washington's most trusted generals, the hero of the Battle of Saratoga, the turning point of the American Revolution. And he marries this beautiful, wealthy, well-educated socialite who happens to be a loyalist, who happens to be pro-British. And guess what? Her ex-boyfriend is John Andre, the British spy. It's no coincidence that Benedict Arnold, when he decides to become a traitor and he decides to conspire and commit treason and sell the American fort at West Point to the British to end the American Revolution, that the person he works with is John Andre. You can bet that it's his wife who connected the two. So that's another really intriguing love triangle from history. And it was, again, a case of, wow, history is juicier than fiction, and wow, I cannot believe I didn't know this, and I can't wait to tell people about this because I think more people need to know about this.
We are visiting with Allison Pataki. She is the author of New York Times bestselling book, The Traitor's Wife, which you just talked about. Also, the new one is The Accidental Empress, the story of Empress Elizabeth Sissi from Hungary. And Allison, we are running out of time, but if you want to give us, if you have a web page or a Facebook page that you want to give us the address to?
Yes, head over to AllisonPataki.com. That's Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, Pataki, P-A-T-A-K-I. com, and you'll find everything on The Accidental Empress and The Traitor's Wife.
Allison, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Louis.
We've been visiting with Allison Pataki. She is the author of The Accidental Empress, also the New York Times bestselling book, The Traitor's Wife.
Sam Elliott, the tough guy with a soft side. I'm Bill Newcott, and from AARP Studios, this is Movies for Grownups.
I want to have lunch with you. What's your name?
Yes.
Your name is Yes?
Yes, I'll go to lunch with you.
When?
Now.
Now?
I'm hungry.
Sam Elliott plays a single-minded guy trying to woo Blythe Danner in I'll See You in My Dreams, the new romance now in theaters. The audience at our recent Movies for Grownups Film Festival in Miami loved this film, and Sam was on hand to do an audience Q&A after the screening. With his rumbling voice and his rugged good looks, Sam is, of course, best known for his roles as man's men in films like The Big Lebowski and on TV shows like Justified. But before our Miami screening, I asked him if he enjoyed playing a romantic lead at age 70.
I liked it. I must say it was a nice change-up. It was incredible. I enjoy all that masculine stuff that I've done in the past, whether it's military or westerns or bikers or whatever. But, you know, an opportunity to be, you know, a gentleman around a really incredible woman was a real pleasure.
Do you feel that that's closer to the real you than other parts you play, or is there?
Yeah, I think those other parts are total fantasies on some level. You know, I mean, a bouncer in a bar, that's not my game, nor is it a general in the military.
How comfortable were you guys together in making the film?
I think, oddly enough, that it kind of mirrored what it did on the screen.
Really?
And Blythe and I had never crossed paths. We clicked right off.
Yeah.
I sensed a kind of a nervousness in her. Right off the top, we were doing one of the kissing scenes that first day. And it was like, I remember Blythe kind of whispering to me. She says, I've never kissed anybody with a mustache. And I thought, wow, really? Anyway, said, well, you're about to.
I'll See You in My Dreams with Blythe Danner and Sam Elliott is in theaters now. I'm Bill Newcomb.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sainz.